We will call the meeting of the House Tax Committee back to our members. We have two items on our agenda for today. When we have a quorum, we'll break in and take care of some housekeeping issues. The first bill up today is House File 2402, then House File 2464. 2402 members will be laid over for possible inclusion. 2464, we would like to get moved out of here if we've got the votes to do it. So with that being said, welcome to the committee. Representative Quam, we do not have a quorum yet. As soon as we do, I'll break in, and we will officially be moving bills. But members, we have before us, or we will have before us here, House File 2402, Medical Device Exemptions Clarified. Representative Lincheski?
Mr. Chair, can I just ask for clarification before you start? I am confused because your staff had told us there were no votes today, and I think a lot of members who are trying to get in the storm, could you clarify for that? Because we really would like to send our staff out to try to get them to start getting here.
Okay, Representative Lincheski, I've just been informed that the word went out that there would be no votes today, so if that's what was said, that's what will happen. So we will hear House File 2402, we will hear House File 2464, no votes taken. With that being said, members, in a future meeting not that far out, we will be voting on 2464 because that needs to move to other committees. So we're just hearing it here. Representative Lincheski?
Well, Mr. Chair, it may be, work out just fine. I think you saw Ms. Sen already left the room to try to get some phone calls going, so possibly as the committee goes on, you may want to get to that point. I just wanted clarification for folks who...
First of all, Chesky, if it's been said that there's no votes today, there'll be no votes today. Okay. And we'll just bring it back on
thank
that.
You.
So with that being said, thank you, Representative Lincheski. Representative Quam, if you could please present your bill, and then we will get into your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill originally was heard in a different form by this committee last session, House File 573. And at that time, we worked on some language, making it compatible with federal language. But the general intent is that durable medical equipment can't function without the valves that you replace every 6 months or a year, or those other components. And in federally defined, durable medical equipment doesn't fall underneath it being taxed. And there was an effort, an exploratory effort, in order to tax the less durable, the replacement parts, and that even went to, I believe, one tax court hearing, and I've got testifiers who can go into that. But this bill is just to conform to the federal approach of you do not tax durable medical equipment and the components that are required to make it work. And if I can go to the testifiers, now would be good.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, whoever would like to go first here.
Sarah Anderson, I represent Key Medical Supply and MAMES, the Minnesota Association of Medical Equipment Suppliers.
Susan Wingert, I represent Pediatric Home Service and MAMES, Midwest Medical Association for Medical Equipment Suppliers.
Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Representative Davids, for offering us this opportunity to speak on our bill this morning. I think we've been here a couple of times before, and I believe the committee is pretty familiar with the history of our issues. But just to briefly reiterate, when the SSUTA agreement was adopted, we had a couple of historic changes from Minnesota's previous exemptions that were entity-based. That entity-based exemption went away with the adoption of SSUTA. Definitions were also changed in that adoption, and that really is what leads us to our bill before the committee today. The definitions, as Representative Plum mentioned, under common health care practice and under federal Medicare practice, define all of the accessory supplies, whether they are disposable in nature or all of the healthcare supplies are generally for single patient use. All disposable supplies are always for single patient use, and that's really kind of one of our definition sticking points. But those that are used on exempted prosthetic devices and exempt durable medical equipment. Under federal Medicare program rules and under common health care definitions, are viewed as part of that exempted device, because without them, the device does not function. So the prosthetic or the durable medical equipment cannot deliver or cannot perform its function without its accessories. That is one of the defining pieces that we ask for clarification on in this bill, or ask for correction in this bill. The other piece is, prior to the adoption of SSUTA, Minnesota exempted sales paid for by Medicare and Medicaid. And that exemption was also removed with the agreement, and we are asking for that to be returned. There was no, at 2005, there, when the agreement was adopted, there was no change in the allowable to increase to now reflect the sales tax. The allowable stayed absolutely the same, and so it was assumed that that was going to be a tax borne by the provider. That is not what sales tax is. It's not a penalty on providers, on businesses to pay. It's meant for consumers to be paid. That is not something that we are able to do when we bill Medicare and Medicaid. When we use the sales tax codes, every claim is denied. That we have a handout that we'll be showing you. If somebody could, if a page could pass this out to the committee. There is information in here showing all of our attempts to bill third-party payers, Medicare, Medicaid, and insurances. Our sales tax claims are denied as not covered under the plan, as patient responsibility, as invalid codes. We have no means of collecting the sales tax. And that's really why we're before you today. So there's a brief history on our problem. And I'm going to turn it over to my colleague to talk a little bit about the patients and the types of products that we that are asked to be taxable under this current proposal.
Again, okay, thank you.
Thank you. First of all, to Ms. Dalton, if the QAM bill became law, does that have any effect on Minnesota standing in the SSUTA?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the original bill would have been in violation. This redraft has been drafted, so it's not in violation.
So we would say that Representative QAM is not in violation.
Mr. Chair, Representative QAM is not in violation of the streamlined sales and use tax agreement.
Okay.
Yes.
And I just, Representative Anderson, do you have a question for Sarah Anderson?
I do, Mr. Chair. I knew the moment she came in and said her name that she was full of wisdom and great things. So thanks for coming here today.
Thank you.
Okay. Please state your name again for the record and who you represent, please.
Oh, excuse me. I'm busy thinking. My name is Susan Wingert, and I represent Pediatric Home Service. Part of the reason I'm here is to discuss the people who use the equipment and why this sales tax is onerous. We take care of medically fragile children in the home. We do that by providing life support. The piece of equipment called the ventilator is durable medical equipment and is not taxable. However, to get the piece of life support to function as life support, there are single patient use items that are attached from the ventilator to the baby. They're called ventilator circuits. They include something called a PEEP valve, which is positive end expiratory pressure valves that allow the baby's lungs to be held open while they grow and develop new tissue. When we bill this product to any insurer, be it Medicaid or a third party, we are denied payment for that service. The question then before the committee is, who's going to pay that tax? I would tell you that the average cost of a child being taken care of in the hospital is something in the neighborhood of $1,700 to $2,500 a day. In the home, it's $700 a day. However, of that $700, a portion of that is single patient use items that keep the child alive. The tax on a baby to utilize those pieces of equipment would be prohibitively expensive. Children would not be allowed to go home. They would stay in the hospital, and they would grow and develop poorly because that is not the proper place to raise a child. Many of the children that we provide care for also have problems eating and growing and developing, mostly because they just came around too soon. While the child grows and develops, they need nourishment. That nourishment is provided by a pump and formula. The pump and formula are not taxable. However, the single patient use items that get the formula to the baby are. There is no payment source for those taxes on those disposable or single patient use items. Also, the way we bill is oftentimes billed in what we refer to as a kit format. There's a certain amount of products and pieces that go together. When we look at how it has been defined as taxable in the kit, some pieces are considered taxable, other pieces are not considered taxable, and how one separates those kits and decides how to tax what is completely... We simply don't know how to do it, nor does a payer know how to pay it. So therefore, what we are saying here, in essence, is we try and collect it. We can't collect it. There's no insurer in the state of Minnesota that is taxable because they're non-for-profit. We don't know who is supposed to pay this tax, and quite frankly, if it's a use tax, which is exactly what a sales tax is supposed to be, it would then be the child that's on the life support equipment or on the food pump that's trying to continue to support themselves as they grow and develop with nourishment. Therefore, this is a bill that needs to be passed. There is no collectability to this tax as it sits at this point.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Ms. Anderson or Ms. Wingert? Members, it would be my intent to, well, first of all, we have a quorum. We'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Crawford moves the minutes of February 28th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are passed. Thank you, Representative Crawford. Okay, I will move House File 2402, the QAM bill, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. I believe Representative Quam, if you could please join us again here. You have an amendment, the A1 amendment. Is that your amendment, Representative Quam?
I'm not. I have not seen the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the A1 amendment is necessary because right now the words exempt is not in paragraph B, and so if you want the items that are purchased by Medicare to be exempt, we need to add them.
Fine amendment, Representative Quam. Any discussion on the amendment?
I now have the amendment, and I am okay with including it.
Okay. Very good move. Okay, so I will move the H2402A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, with that, questions for Ms. Anderson or Ms. Wingert? Okay, thank you very much. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe, Council could just go through this fiscal note. So it's a $17 million cost, is that right?
Yes.
And
I think that's a very good idea. Thanks, Representative Lincheski. Mm-hmm. Okay. We will do that. But first of all, there's no questions for Ms. Anderson or Ms. Wingert. Okay, you can, if you want to step aside, because I'm going to bring forward at the request of Representative Runbeck, Ms. Templin, to go over the revenue note here. Oh, did you have anything you wanted to wrap up there, Ms. Anderson? I'm sorry.
I do, in relation to the fiscal note.
Yes.
In the
revenue
analysis,
estimate.
The revenue estimate. In the analysis data that's that was used by the department, there's an estimate that uses national health expenditure data. That data, and the estimate is that 70% of the non-durable medical products paid for by Medicare or Medicaid would be exempted by this bill. We believe that that's an overstatement of what would be exempted by this bill. Many of those products are already exempted under the worn on the body, the clothing exemptions, or the other exemptions in place. And the data itself, the national health expenditure data, includes a very long list of items that are not covered by Medicare or Medicaid, that are sundries, things like contact lens solution, contact lenses themselves. There's a very long list of items in that data pool that is much greater than what we would actually be talking about covering in this in this bill. So it is our belief that this number is higher than what would actually be represented. It's a much smaller, the life support products that we're talking about that would be, that are currently taxable, that would become exempt, are a much, much smaller dollar number than what this is based on.
Okay, let's go with Ms. Templin, if we could, from House Research. And then is there, House Fiscal, is there anyone from the department that might be able to come down and address the comments just made? Okay, we'll call on you in a little bit to address that issue. Welcome, Clerk. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Analysis. Mr. Chair, I'm looking at the revenue estimate for House File 2402, and there is a $17.2 million estimated revenue loss starting in Fiscal 13. The revenue loss is higher in the first year because of the retroactive effective date of April 1, 2009. The estimated revenue loss in fiscal 14 is $4.8 million, and in 15 it's $5.2 million. Most of that revenue loss is estimated to come from the general fund. And to the testifier's comment about the 70%, I don't. Maybe this will add some clarification. I did ask the analyst that prepared this estimate kind of what that meant, and he said that 70% of the total spending on non-durables is exempted because it is paid by Medicare and Medicaid, and the other 30% is being assumed to be paid by someone else or is already exempt. I don't know if that adds, kind of provides a little more background.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Templin, if this if were to become law and it's retroactive, to whom would this sales tax reimbursement be paid? I mean, there obviously would be a refund, I would think. So to whom would that go?
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, this would go to the purchasers of the medical devices.
No. Excuse me. Let's go to
Ms.
Dalton, if that's okay. Right. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, because, as they stated earlier, they have never actually collected these sales taxes from the federal government, the refund would actually go to the sellers of these goods.
The sellers.
Representative Erickson.
No, thank you.
Representative Baum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since they have never collected this, there wouldn't be any refund.
I mean, it would be forgiven. Yeah.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, to the extent that Representative Baum is correct and this tax has not been remitted to the state, there would not be a refund. And I would not be the person to comment on how much of this has been remitted to the state at this point.
Okay, we'll get to the Department of Revenue in a second. Thanks. Any more questions for Ms. Templin? Thank you, Ms. Templin. Okay, so for the revenue estimate. Okay, if the department could please come down. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Susan Von Mosch. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Revenue. Regarding the revenue estimate, I would also point out that the second bullet on page 2, which goes on to further state that the estimate assumes that this bill would further be exempting 3% of consumer out-of-pocket spending and 5% of the Medicare and Medicaid spending. So we are at this revenue estimate does scale down the amount of money that is spent from the national database. It's really taking those two bullet points together in getting to the bottom line for the estimate. And then the other thing I'd emphasize is that this is the market for these types of products is very large, and that some of the people who are involved may not, they might make up a smaller portion of the market, but this really is the best estimate that we can make given the data that revenue does have available. And then the other point I would make is that we we develop all of these revenue estimates on the assumption of full compliance. And so we are assuming that if everyone is paying the tax, that this would be what the fiscal impact is. We always assume full compliance with all of our revenue estimates.
And well, we should. Any questions for Ms. Von Mosch of the department? Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Representative Quam, now members, once again, we are not voting on this. The bill has been amended. It'll be laid over for possible inclusion in a future tax bill here. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at last year's revenue estimate and the new fiscal note, the only thing that is different, 14 and 15, the out years are identical in here. The only thing that is different is $13,070. I'm sorry, $13,070,000 more in the new fiscal note, which I can only assume would be trying to collect in the past. And there was an audit and an attempt to do that, and that attempt failed in the appropriate court. And so I guess I would dispute that they would have much success going backwards again, since they already failed in their previous attempt. So then I see this as a new tax being imposed, and that I think it's being imposed on a group of people and on a group of equipment that should not be taxed.
Okay, and it's a revenue estimate, not a fiscal note on this, just for the record. Okay, Ms. Anderson, first of all, are there other folks in the audience that have traveled in the murky weather today to testify for this bill or with concerns? Okay. Ms. Anderson, is there a currently a court case going on this issue right now?
There is not to our knowledge, is there a current court case. Our organization was audited in 2008 and put forward challenges through the department based on the 2005 changes and the interpretations, and won our challenges, which set a precedent exempting other agencies from the 2005 implementation through April of 2009, which was when the Department of Revenue published some changes in their fact sheets. There are other organizations that are part of our trade association that have current challenges before the department for their audits. We do know that there are other member entities that have had audits where products that one group is being told are taxable, the next team is not viewing those products as taxable, so there's some inconsistency amongst those going through audits within our trade association. I think this is truly a confusing regulation due to the complexity of the definitions and the vast divergence that those definitions have from healthcare industry standards.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Representative Crawford, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to ask how the April 1st, 2009 date was arrived at. I assume it's through the audit.
The April 1st, 2009 date is arrived because that is the date that the fact sheets for sales and use tax regarding healthcare products, durable medical equipment, prosthetics, and mobility-enhancing devices were revised to reflect the changes that were made in 2005.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Representative Crawford. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I ask Ms. Dalton or Mr. Michael to discuss this finding of, and maybe it's Ms. Von Mosch, we just heard it's an audit, so I know that's proprietary information when there's an audit of a taxpayer. So we're probably not going to get into the weeds of this particular company who would benefit from this proposed legislation, but are you aware that there's been some Department of Revenue sort of ruling on this that's counter to the law? I mean, that seems pretty unlikely to me. So I think we're kind of getting, and maybe if there's some court things following through. I know Mr. Michael usually briefs the tax chair with the Department of Revenue staff on any court, you know, sits in the room while the court folks come in and talk about all the legal issues that taxpayers need to know about. I don't know if that's happened with you yet, Mr. Chair, and I don't know if the Department of Revenue has gotten into this one, but I'm not even aware of this, that this had happened in 05, so maybe your staff, Mr. Chair, could tell us.
Well, let's go to Mr. Michael on this.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincheski, I don't know anything more about except listening to what the testifiers have said, and maybe I can sort of restate and translate what I think happened here, and that may help you. I think what happened was that they were subject to sales tax audits, and they went through the administrative appeal process in the Department of Revenue. And I think the outcome of that appeal process found that the informational materials that the Department of Revenue had used, the fact sheets, were not consistent with the audit position that they had taken. And so as a result of that, they won their administrative appeals. What Revenue did was then to revise the fact sheets to be consistent with the position that they had taken in the audit. That's the date that they selected for their effective or their retroactive effective date. And now the Department of Revenue is, of course, continuing to audit consistent with their prior audit position and now consistent with the fact sheet. And this organization and Representative Quam are trying to change the law to essentially exempt this and reverse that position. So there's no tax court case. There's no litigation going on.
Representative Lincheski. Okay, other questions for Ms. Anderson or Ms. Winger?
Representative Davids, I have one question that I just need somebody to answer for me. And that is, who is supposed to pay this tax? I can't collect it. So who is supposed to pay this tax? To me, this is one of those things that is simply impossible to do. Do we actually have the state government go after the patients to collect this use tax? Because I don't know who else is going to get it.
Mr. Michael, who's supposed to pay the tax? That's what I do when I have no clue. Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think, as with any sales tax, the responsibility for paying the tax is on the purchaser, and the responsibility for collecting the tax is on the seller. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there may be market problems with, and in this case, we're dealing with the federal government, and of course the federal government makes its own rules. And so under Medicare, to the extent that Medicare is paying for these materials, they have made it clear, and we don't have any ability to change the Medicare rules, that they are not going to pay. And so therefore it's going to fall somewhere on either the provider to pay out of their margin or their costs, or to try to collect it from the user, whether or not Medicare would actually allow that, because you get into something that looks like you're trying to charge more for service than what Medicare allows, and I don't believe that Medicare allows you to do that, but I'm not sure.
Ms. Onmash, can you come down a second, please?
If I could just add one piece to that.
Ms. Anderson.
Thank you for recognizing me. The Department of Human Services that operates the Medicaid program in Minnesota doesn't even recognize the code, the billing code that we would be able to use for sales tax. So we have to change policy there as well in order to even attempt to collect.
How's that going?
We've got a nice email back saying this isn't going to happen. I'm summarizing.
Ms. Von Mosch, could you try and help us out to the Wingert question? It seems that we have a situation here that we're kind of in a box, and Representative Quam's trying to get us out of this box. How would you answer the Wingert question?
Mr. Chair, members, I guess I would answer the question the same way that Mr. Michael did, in terms of how our tax laws are currently structured. And it does seem as if the providers are in a tough position.
So you rely on Mr. Michael, too.
Not supposed to.
No, you're very wise. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we all do, right? The whole state is relying on the nonpartisan staff. Mr. Chair, I continue to be confused by this issue because I understand the frustration, but the scenario that's been laid out is the case for everybody who's collecting the sales tax. You know, if you're collecting a sales tax as a seller and you're pushing it down to the purchaser, I mean, we know sales taxes are regressive. I mean, in the end, it's the consumer who's paying it. So an industry who has to collect a tax, they have to decide, and this is, you know, capitalism. Are they all going to eat that in their margins? Are they all going to pass it down to the consumer in the purchase price? And I guess, you know, the thing I don't understand is everybody in this industry is equally advantaged or disadvantaged. There are no, you know, the state is silent on these different companies. I mean, they either all pay or they all don't, and the law says they all do. And if they don't have a mechanism to actually collect, they have to, by law. And that's why they owe a tax bill that I understand people don't want to pay. But, you know, unless I'm missing something in this, I mean, that's how I understand it. And Mr. Chair, maybe you have a different way of thinking about this. I mean, if you want to give a new tax expenditure to give a tax break to say that they don't have to pay it anymore. But, you know, all sales taxes are pushed down ultimately. That's why they're regressive, because consumers pay for them and higher prices are... You know,
Riffle and Chesky, isn't the difference here is they can charge the sales tax, but they have no way to get reimbursed.
Well, Mr. Chair, neither does anyone else. I mean, if you sell, I think they're all their issue. I think is more with the federal government than us if they want to prevail. I don't know. I mean, I just have not understood if there was a person in the industry who was getting a benefit that someone else in the industry wasn't, but they're all in this same boat together. So it's like, you know, if we wish we didn't have to pay our taxes we're due, you know, I understand people don't want to pay them, but until the law gets changed, and you have to decide if that's worth a $20 million cost to you, but...
Thank you, Representative Lincheski. And to the point, there's a point made that some people from the Department of Revenue are saying you do it this way, and some people are getting on the same question that you do it this way. Ms. Von Mosch, is that an issue, or is it the same for everybody?
Mr. Chair, I am not sure about that. I believe that might be something that was taking place in the audit process, and I would have to go back and check
okay,
on that.
That's fair. Okay, any other questions for the witnesses? Ms. Wingert?
If I might respond to the representative, thank you for recognizing me. The difference between our industry and, say, a drugstore, as an example, if I go into the drugstore and want to buy the pen, and the pen costs a dollar, sales tax is put on that. If I want to take the pen out of the drugstore, I have to pay the sales tax. In our industry, we are not allowed to bill for the product until after we have delivered it and educated on it and the patient uses it. So we have no methodology of being able to say we aren't going to give you that until you pay the use tax that the state is asking you to pay. And so from our perspective, you are looking at apples and oranges in this case. If it was something that we could legitimately get paid for, then we would collect it and we would remit it. Mm-hmm. But in this particular case, we have not only no way of collecting it, but we have no way of telling the user they can't have their product if they don't pay for it. So to me, it is an entirely different thing than saying to the pen salespeople, you know, well, I know you don't want to pay the tax, but you've got to, because they've collected it, by God. We haven't, and we cannot collect it before we deliver the product. It's illegal. And we can't raise our prices. Those prices are defined by you, the state of Minnesota. The state of Minnesota says this is how much we're going to pay you for a product. When they decided to increase the sales tax obligation to this industry, they didn't say, okay, well, we're just going to give you the 6.785 or whatever that number is to accommodate that so that you can then pay it. They didn't. And I'm quite sure the state of Minnesota is not saying to small business, we are going to penalize you almost 7% while you're trying to grow your business and add jobs to this economy. I just can't believe it.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Anderson or Ms. Wingert? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Wingert, is Medicare and Medicaid part of the problem in the way they reimburse? I know I have issues with them all the time. So,
Representative, I would suggest to you that...
Oh,
excuse me. Pardon me. Thank you. I would suggest to you that since our reimbursement has been cut for the last 5 years, that not only have we not had a mechanism to increase our prices to accommodate increased price to us, but we have had it our reimbursement decreased substantially.
If I could add to that.
Erickson?
No, Mr. Chair. I just know how difficult it is when you have anything dealing with Medicare since I'm old.
Chair. Please strike that from the record. Representative Rukavina.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Representative Lincheski for coming on to my point of view because I heard her say the problem is capitalism. But that's a whole other issue. But anyway, but isn't the same to the lady, to the testifiers? Doesn't Blue Cross and Blue Shield and other insurance companies do the same as Medicare and Medicaid and tell you here's your set price for that machine?
That
and
is
this is all we're reimbursing you, so it's not just Medicare and Medicaid, it's the whole healthcare industry.
Ms. Wingert?
Representative is absolutely accurate. All of us run within what they call a fee schedule, and that fee schedule sets the limit on what we are allowed to charge. Blue Cross and Blue Shield does one more thing to us, which is also to say you may not increase your prices on a yearly basis more than the CPI. So therefore, we are not even allowed to cover the cost of the increase to doing our business. This is a community of small business people who probably employ an average of about 35 to 70 people who are serving a very, very vulnerable population. This kind of tax will eliminate a number of those people from being able to do their business. What does that mean? That means access to health care is going to go away. And that's just a fact. This didn't happen before 2005. I don't understand why it needs to happen now. And quite frankly, it's
frustrating.
Thank you. Frustrating would be a pleasant way of putting it.
Let's hear the other way.
Representative Rukavina, you still have the floor, sir.
No, that's all, Mr.
Ms. Anderson.
Thank you for recognizing me, Chairman Davids. I'd like to just add to the comments that Susan made in answering Representative Rukavina's question. Not only do we not have control over the reimbursement prices, the allowables that we set, we don't have control over the billing systems that we use. HIPAA, a federal law designed to make health insurance portable across all platforms, governs how we can submit claims. It governs the codes that we can use. As Ms. Wingert represented in her testimony earlier, we have to bill some items with kitted codes, so components that should be taxable. We have no way to break those out and charge tax on the items that are taxable and exempt those items, the components of the kit that are non-taxable. We have an impossible billing system to comply with this regulation. So even if we could get payers to pay the sales tax for their items, we have no method of billing for it in a compliant, HIPAA-compliant way on our claims.
Sure.
And that is represented in the graph in your handout because over 40% just say this is not an accepted covered charge. Our code for sales tax, which exists, is just kicked out from the payer saying we don't even recognize this as an acceptable code or an acceptable charge.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, and to Representative Quam or whomever here can answer, would the bill be easier and simplified if you just didn't have any retroactivity? Is there a specific reason why the retroactivity has to be addressed, or does it just make it better if we just say from this point forward there will be no tax collected on these items?
Representative Palm?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina. Basically, looking at some of the companies that have been audited and the data, that the retroactivity would wipe out all their profits and for some of the companies to go out of business. So that is why the retroactivity is in there. And, we're trying to avoid because, frankly, in the metro area, there are a lot of options. In parts of greater Minnesota, there are very few. And you don't want to be waiting on a mail order piece of equipment or product. And so that's why they serve a very vital function to a group of people. Frankly, we could have some of the consumers come before committee, but it's difficult to travel even the best of weather. Thank you.
Representative Rucamina?
No.
Members, I know, I'm sure that there's some rule someplace that says that I can't mention what the Senate's doing. I think maybe that's just on the floor, but I'm going to anyways. The companion, and correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Quam, the companion over in the Senate is not retroactive, and then when you look at the revenue estimate there, you're looking at the same numbers in 14 and 15, but in 13, you're going from 16.3 and 900,000, the 17.2 actually goes down to 4.1 without the retroactivity. And I understand why you're doing what you're doing, but very seldom, I've been around here a couple of years, do we go retroactive. It has been done, and we're the tax committee. We can do whatever we want. But as this discussion goes on, we'll have to try and work this out because you're in a very difficult situation. And so, Representative Lencheski.
Well, Mr. Chair, since you can do whatever you want, do you have a target, Mr. Chair, yet for this committee for this year? Do you have any spreadsheet ideas?
Representative Lencheski, I really want one, but I don't have one.
Do you want a positive or a negative? Which what are you rooting for there?
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lencheski. Stay tuned. Okay, so with that, any other questions for the author or the witnesses? Thank you, Ms. Wingert and Ms. Anderson. Very, very well done.
Thank you.
And so we want to thank you for being here. Representative Quam, we will lay 2402 as amended over possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. And I don't believe there's any other testifiers we asked earlier. Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Anderson, Ms. Winger, and Representative Quam.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, item next, I will move House File 2464. Is there, let's see here. Okay, so I will move that bill. That is a David's bill. And a David's Rukavina bill. So it's got to be good. Okay, with that, members, what this does, this has to do with liquor reporting requirements and penalties and so forth with the Department of Revenue. Is there, first of all, anyone that would wish to testify against House File 2464, the chairman's bill? Anyone? Okay, why don't we do this? Why don't we go, we have one person that would like to do that. We have some folks here who would like to testify on behalf of the bill. Why don't we bring the folks who want to testify on behalf of the bill down to testify first, and then we will give the folks that have concerns equal time, or maybe not equal time, but all the time they need, I should say. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Darrell Bungie. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Wholesale Wine and Spirits Council. We represent, it's a trade association representing the wine and spirits wholesalers doing business here in Minnesota.
Hey, welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill basically takes an onerous burden that's been placed on us to provide information that we may not have access to, particularly accurate information by the Department of Revenue. And with me today is Fred Richards, who is the Credit and Collections Director for Johnson Brothers Liquor, one of the members of our association. And I think he can kind of walk you through what the problem is and how this bill cures it.
Mr. Thank Richards, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fred Richards, I'm the Credit and Collections Director at Johnson Brothers Liquor Company.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. Representatives, I'll just walk you through some of the process that we have to follow. There's a reporting requirement that every March we have to report all of our alcohol sales to all of our customer, or on all of our customers to the Department of Revenue, listing the number of the amount of alcohol that's sold to each location. In that report, we also have to provide a Minnesota tax ID number as provided by the customer. That Minnesota tax ID number, again, is provided by the customer in the form of a tax resale exemption certificate that the customer provides to us. We have no access to whether that number that was provided is actually a valid number or a typographical error or if it's correct, et cetera. So we have no idea if it's actually an accurate number because those numbers are, the Minnesota tax ID number, are provided by the state to the retailer, our customer in this case. So when we provide that report to the Department of Revenue, sometimes they will come back to us and say, no, this is an invalid, you're out of compliance with filing this report, even though we're relying on the good faith of the customer that they provide an accurate number.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Richards. Any questions from the committee members before we bring the department down? First of all, anybody else like to testify for this bill or with concern? Okay, any questions for Mr. Richards and Mr. Bungie? Representative Rukavina?
So what happens then if you have a number that doesn't jive with the Department of Revenue? Do they fine you? Do they? What do they do to you, sir?
Mr. Richards.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Representative, they give us a period of time, such as they'll send us a letter and give us a period of time, such as 2 weeks, to provide a corrected number. So then we have to go back to the customer or the retailer and ask them to either refill out the certificate or get a number from them, the corrected number. And oftentimes they don't understand, they're unsure what number we're actually asking for.
Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chairman?
To take that a little bit further, the Rukavina question, okay, so you got 2 weeks to do that. What happens then if it's not done in the 2 weeks? What does the department do then? I mean, take away your birthday or what?
Yeah. What? Mr. Chairman, thank you. If we don't provide that number, then we could be potentially liable for the tax, even though it may have been remitted by the retailer in the first place, which could ultimately be a double taxation where we've remitted the sales tax and the customer has remitted the sales tax both to the state. And there could be potential fines.
Why are you collecting that for the department? Doesn't the department already have that?
Mr. Chairman, yes. those numbers are provided. They're issued by the Department of Revenue to the retailer.
Perfect segue for the department to come down and tell us why they have concerns. Ms. Von Mosch, or any more questions for Mr. Bungie or Mr. Richards? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Susan Von Mosch, Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to start out by clarifying one thing that was in the bill, and that is that the exemption certificate isn't required to be part of the annual report or the information report that is sent into the department. We do have a spreadsheet on the web that specifies what needs to be in that report. That report does require a tax ID number, either a federal or a state tax ID number. And these numbers are important to us because the Department of Revenue uses them to identify customers and to verify the fact that they're paying taxes. And so, for us, it's really the second section of the bill, section two, that says that the tax ID number does not need to be part of the report that we have concerns with, because without that, our ability to audit liquor retailers would become much more time-consuming and much more difficult to do. And so we really do need that tax identification number. It isn't a number, at least it's my understanding, that it isn't a number that we all the time always have within the department, only if they were to register with us. And the other thing is sometimes the The tax ID number, it doesn't necessarily match up with a business name or a business address. The wholesaler might be delivering the liquor to a location that is different from a business location. Someone might be doing business as a certain liquor store that is not the name of the taxpayer or the company that has the tax ID number. So we really do need tax ID numbers to be able to track and do compliance on sales tax collections.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Von Mosch. Any questions for Ms. Von Mosch? Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Was there a problem that was foreseen for this legislation to pass in 2008? Was it that revenue was lacking this information, Ms. Von Mosch?
Ms. Von Mosch?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure of your reference of 2008. I'm relatively new to the department, although I did work in taxes earlier, but I'm not sure of that reference.
Representative Erickson?
Well, Mr. Chair, according to the bill summary, this reporting requirement was enacted by the 2008 legislature, and the first reports were required to be filed in 9 for calendar year 8. So this is recent legislation to require this report, and I'm wondering what was the basis for the legislation in 8.
Ms. Von Mosch?
Mr. Chair Member, I would have to go back and do some research on that.
I've got a really good idea.
Mr. Michael?
Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this was a request from the department, and it's a way, I think they were asking for it as a way to enhance compliance. I'm not sure precisely. Susan Berry, who's up there, may certainly probably better capable of responding on that than I am, because it's a question of what the department intended.
What was the department thinking? Ms. Berry?
This is Susan Berry from the Department of Revenue, and I agree with Joel.
Okay.
That's enough.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. It will be laid over, and members, please look on your emails for the agenda for tomorrow. With that, members, thank you for your work today, and thank you, staff. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.